I apologize for that, but it's probably not going to get any better, at least for a while. Once I get to yakking, my wife will be the first to tell you I can continue for a long time without stopping it. At some point, I'll have to take a breath, but I'm pretty fast at that, and I'll just keep right on talking. So write the number down. If you call, your call 99 times out of 100 will trump whatever I'm saying. I put great importance on what my listeners have to contribute to the program, and I will not leave you hanging out there on hold forever and ever unless I'm smack dab in the middle of an interview with someone with whom I had a formal interview scheduled. It's just me going on and on, kind of like I am now, I guess. Yeah, we'll keep going. Weather much better today, I guess, than it was earlier in the week, at least over here in the Galleria area, not just honking out of the southwest. Man, I don't know about you guys, but I'm about tired of southwest wind. It muddied up this, it muddied up that, and it just generally, it certainly messed up the surf. I had two or three friends of mine just hoping against all hope they could get in good surf fishing trips this week. And at least right along the beachfront, it just refused to clear up. I'm looking at this morning's surf cam pictures as we speak, and not overly impressed. It's just a little bit on the bumpy side to be comfortable in the surf, frankly. Nah, it shouldn't be bad. You're going to have to take some of those little bounce steps and just ride the swell if you're standing on a second bar, and that's on presumption that the water's in good shape, and I'm not so sure it is. It's got a hint of green to it. There's not quite enough light on top of the water yet to really get a good estimation of its color. But I like what I see, frankly, for, what is this, 7:05 in the morning. So if you're headed down there running a little late, at least to Surfside, remain optimistic until you crest the bridge. And then let me know what you see. Galveston, the camera in Galveston's never quite up to snuff. It's a little bumpier there on that flat adjacent to the pleasure pier. And noteworthy, not a soul in the water. That tells me a good bit, nor are there any boats out by the pier itself. So that tells me kind of enough right there about potential along the Galveston beachfront this morning. Maybe freshwater's your option. It's blue sky. I would hope you had gotten an early start. Going to be probably, mid-90s on most of the lakes by about noon. It's a good time of year to be in the water early or on the water early. And once the sun really clears the treetops on the lakes, or I guess just becomes unbearable on the bays, time to punt. Go back, take a nap, wait until late in the afternoon, and go back out. Makes for a very long day, whether you're in a boat or waiting. But those are your better options. Once again, 713-212-5790. Going through my list of things to talk about, I'm trying to finish up. Well, I say finish up just in case the editor is listening. I'm trying to get a little bit deeper than the head and the subhead in a piece on mountain lions for a good friend of mine. And I remember when I brought this subject up about a month ago, I heard from a couple of people who are pretty confident that they have seen mountain lions. And after the research I have done so far, it's kind of a maybe not. It even made me doubt myself on the one what I was pretty confident was a legitimate mountain lion sighting. And that was, pardon me, there was a yawn I was trying to stifle there. Mountain lion sighting about, oh gosh, it's probably been 30 years ago now. Now I'm not so sure. According to the information that I found, and this was not some exhaustive research, this was just a couple of clicks at the Parks and Wildlife Department site, There have been mountain lions sighted in every county in Texas. But the information is quick, that piece is quick to point out also that not all of those sightings were confirmed. And in fact, when you look at counties where there have been mountain lion mortalities, which I think would be a much better indicator of their actual presence, mountain lion mortalities only in 67 of the state's 250-some-odd counties, 254, I think. So 6 out of 25, a little bit, wouldn't make much of a batting average. 67 for 254, you're looking inside of a 250 batting average. Not so great. So maybe it wasn't a mountain lion I saw. I really truly want to believe it was. I'm still, a week ago, would probably have put my confidence in that sighting of mine at 85 to 90%. After reading what I've read, maybe more like about 70, 75%. And by the way, contrary to what your grandpappy may have told you, there are no black panthers, no truly black-furred panthers or mountain lions in Texas. None has ever actually been documented, not a single one. What the people who have seen them more likely saw was a particular way that a low light was cast upon the animal when it was seen. It made it look much darker than it actually was. If you have seen one, if you're really confident of that, and you saw the pug marks, and you can show me a picture of your hand next to a cat's footprint that's almost as big as your grown man's hand, I'd love to see them. I'd love to have something to put into this piece to document an actual bona fide sighting in Harris County. According to this, well, sightings, yes, in Harris County, no mortalities. No mortalities in Harris, Fort Bend, Brazoria. Pretty much, I would say 85% of the counties in which mountain lions actually have been either hunted dead or found dead are in extreme west and southwest Texas. Once you get out of there, if you draw a diagonal line from that little crook out there, the little corner in West Texas, where West Texas meets the line going up to North Texas, I don't know what county that is, and they're not marked on my little tiny map here, and I'm not going to take a lot of time to go look it up. But if you draw a line from there to Galveston Bay, everything north and east of there, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, maybe 20 counties of the 67. So one-third of the counties in which mountain lions have actually been found dead were found there. And some of the counties of West Texas are the size of 4 or 5 East Texas counties, kind of like Texas against New England as far as state size goes. So they're out there. They're out there in the drier areas. Amazing animals, the more I read about them, too. It's going to be a fun piece once I actually sit down and get to put it together for this guy. Deadline passed yesterday. But hope springs eternal that I'll have it to him before Monday morning, and that should be good enough. The editors with whom I work know me well enough to know to put a little buffer in there. A July 7th deadline probably means Monday or Tuesday would be all right. Fingers crossed. He hasn't called to tell me to forget it yet. That's good news. So we've got a lot of fishing going on. I would love to hear something I can use in this piece about mountain lions, if you have a story to share, as did a few of you the past time that I brought them up. And we'll go from there and see where else it goes. I am curious to see what James has to say about when to shoot, when not to shoot, when to draw, when not to draw in public places. And one question I had for him, and I don't know the answer to this, and maybe if Patrolman Chris is listening this morning, he could weigh in. Let's say, for example, you have you've taken your family to an establishment that has a sign out front that says, "We are proud to prohibit the carry of concealed weapons on our premises. This is a no guns facility." And you think, you know, I'm uncomfortable without my weapon. I don't want to leave it in my car. I'm just going to be extremely careful not to expose it, and I'm going to go ahead and carry it. I'm permitted all the way to the doorstep, and I'll just be very quiet and discreet inside the restaurant, store, theater, grocery store, whatever, wherever you are. And whilst in there with your family, a couple of bad guys kick in the door and come in and start waving weapons and demanding everyone's money. Maybe fire a shot into the ceiling to get everybody's attention. What do you do? Do you draw your weapon and protect the people, your family around you and yourself? Or do you just cross your fingers and hope for the best? Connor, what would you do in that situation?
I'm protecting myself.
Yeah. Yeah, and then let your attorney sort out whatever you might get for carrying that weapon into a place where they said you couldn't carry it. Is that kind of where you are on that?
Yeah, I'm going to always go that way.
Yeah, better the adage is to be judged by 12 than carried by 6. And it's harsh. But yeah, if I'm in a situation where I have an opportunity to save not only my own life and my family's lives, but the lives of innocent people around me, I'm going to go ahead and I think, and one of the interesting things that he and I will talk about is how so many of us, and here I'm putting myself in this position as well, who are relatively untrained in the speed and the intensity of an actual situation where guns have been drawn and rounds touched off, we're real quick to tell you what we'd do in those situations, but maybe not so good in the actual situation and might be prone to make a mistake. It's not enough once you have a concealed carry permit to just swing by the range once a month and burn up a couple of magazines of ammo. Hitting a paper target. That's cute and all, but in real life, that's not how it works. That would be the equivalent, I think, in terms, Michael, that you can understand, certainly. That would be the equivalent of going to the driving range once or twice a month, hitting a small bucket, and figuring you were ready for the tour.
Yeah, that wouldn't work.
It's just not going to work. It's a little bit shy.
About all my video games where I shoot guns on those? Don't those help?
No.
Darn.
No, they don't. I'm sorry. Now, there are some really good simulators out there. I visited the one when it opened at Gander Mountain up on 45, and there is one room in that place that has, the walls are probably, in memory, they're 8 feet tall, and it's, I believe, a 270-degree display around you that is actual video that was shot with real actors portraying criminals in various scenarios, and your reaction to each of their actions triggers a response on a keyboard by the instructor that brings up another scene. If you say stop, then that instructor pushes a button and the bad guys do a certain thing. If you turn and back away, then they do something else. And there's a lot of conversation between you and the bad guys. You can tell them to do things. You can tell them to stop. You can tell them to turn around. A lot of things you can do to change. They can change the lighting. They can change the weather scenario in there. There's a lot they can do in that simulator. And I got to go through about 15 minutes of that and then saw a couple of other guys go through equally intense, totally different scenario. Mine was a convenience store thing. And I got to tell you, buddy, it raises your blood pressure, gets your heart pounding. And it was the real deal, and it was scary. I'll talk about some of that later. We need to stop. We need to take a little break. On the way out, the best way, speaking of golf, to improve your short game is with good practice, and the best place to practice, probably right there in your own backyard. A little chipping, a little putting on a Jack Nicklaus design putting green custom built by Southwest Greens of Houston. That's my old buddy Peter Gunn. He's been doing this for, 25, 30, 40 years. Putting greens in every size backyard around here. Everything from very modest little putting greens to elaborate, nearly full shot holes on some acreage outside of town where you could stand back and wallop a wedge and hit it onto a green that will receive that ball exactly as would real turf. Your chips check up, your chips back up if you put enough spin on them on these greens. Your putts roll true to whatever stimp you set. A lot of tour pros choose Southwest Greens for their yards. The putts roll true and the chip shots hold. That's critical to your practice. It needs to be like what you're going to experience on the golf course, and is if you have got a Southwest Greens of Houston green in your backyard. To find out more, it's very simple. Go to the website, check the photo gallery, then dial the number and give Peter Gunn a call. SWGHouston.com. That's the website. SWGHouston.com. We'll take a little break here. Be right back. The Doug Pike Show on Sports Talk 790. That takes me a long ways back, Connor. I can't even remember. What band is that?
It's Kiss. I wasn't intending to give you Kiss. But
what'd you do?
I hit the button to go back to the music page too late, and that was the only one I could get.
You just had to push first available.
Yep. It was gonna be that or some jazz song. So
Barry Manilow.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be the end of the world, but yes, this far, far more impressive. Joe Black and I had an interesting swap of emails during the break about the scenario I threw out there on concealed carry as to whether or not you pull up on a place, a restaurant, a store, and it says no guns allowed. We don't care who you are. We don't care what your permit says. You can't bring a gun in here. But you go ahead and you carry it in there anyway. You know you're going against their store's rules. And all of a sudden you're in there with your family and some knuckleheads break in and start hollering and screaming, pop a shot into the ceiling, tell everybody to give them their money. Joe and I both agree that the last thing you want to do is try to be a hero and whip out that weapon and get into a gunfight with three or four other people. That's the odds aren't in your favor, but doggone, I'm not gonna be the first one who gets, and golly, what if one of them shoots someone and starts threatening other people? There are so many scenarios, and that's why you go through the training, and that's why it's so important. I think James Toll is going to join us at 8 o'clock. I think that's why you also make sure that you get as much training as you can. Michael, I sent you the email with his home phone number, correct?
Correct.
Okay, good. Well, in 30 minutes, we'll know all about this. We'll be able to answer all these questions. On an entirely lighter note, and I'll guarantee you that as crackerjack a guy as Connor is in finding events and knowing about what's coming up, this one he doesn't have. On Friday and Saturday, July 17th and 18th, the good people of Natural Balance Dog Foods, and I told these people I'd give them some play just for fun, just for giggles, I think, as much as anything else. It's kind of interesting. They are having what they call the Natural Balance Characters Casting Call, going to be held at the Houston World Series of Dog Shows. You already got your tickets, don't you?
I don't.
You should.
I might have to get on that.
It could sell out quick. The Houston World Series of Dog Shows. Yeah, Natural Balance is coming in from 9 to noon and 1 to 5. What they're going to do over there, it's going to cost you $15 to get in. If you're my age, you can get in for $10. Still, you have to think about that for a little bit when you add parking on that. But you got the big dog show going on anyway. And what Natural Balance is doing is coming in trying to find some dogs for their new photo campaign, their new ad campaign. So if you think you've got a good one, I guess the best thing to do is going to be just go to their website. Let me see if that's on here somewhere. No, it's not. So I would just go ahead and go to Natural Balance's website and see what's going on. It says here, your dog will step in front of the camera and could be featured in Natural Balance's new Natural Characters campaign, which celebrates the unique character inside every pet. Yeah. That character is established very early on in puppyhood, I think, amongst dogs. Most of the most memorable things dogs do typically happen in the first about the year and a half or so. I had a friend of mine who bought an Irish setter. This is one of the few guys in high school who had his own apartment, and I don't know how that worked out. But he had an apartment across the street from the school, and don't ask me how that happened.
Was he paying for it?
I have no idea.
Oh, man.
I think his parents were paying for it, actually.
They just didn't want him in the house.
I guess, and maybe it was more convenient for him to just be close and them not have to get him to school. I don't know what the situation was, but I know he put a dog in that apartment, and I know it was a big dog, and I know he left it confined one day when he came to school in the hallways. What he did, he closed off all the bedroom doors, put some kind of a barrier there at the kitchen or whatever, and so this dog was had very little natural light coming in there and just decided that wasn't where he wanted to be. And when this guy got home from school and opened the apartment door, the dog was in the den, had eaten most of the couch already by then because he got tired of chewing walls and doors. And he had attempted to get through almost all the closed doors and had gotten through the one that got him back in the den. Or maybe he just ate through whatever barrier the guy put up. But pretty much the apartment was destroyed. It looked like maybe on the woodworking side, on the doors and wall side, it looked like a family of beavers had moved in, and it attempted at least to put up a dam. They couldn't get the studs out of the wall. But yeah, this was pretty special what that dog did to that apartment.
I've come home to a destroyed home, not destroyed, but stuff everywhere.
Ex girlfriend?
No, from a dog.
I'm just taking a stab. I didn't know.
No, I haven't made anybody that mad yet.
Well. Hope springs young. Give it time, Connor. You're young. You'll make one of them mad one of these days, and you won't even know why. That's the fun part. Sometimes you don't even know what you did wrong. You come home, you think everything's cool. I talked to a buddy of mine, one of the guys who's a coach out where my son plays Little League, and we were talking about doing chores around the house that we think are going to get us pats on the back that don't. I did some ad-libbed freelance landscaping a few days ago, and I thought it opened up the yard. I thought it made everything look more, made the yard look a little bigger, because I took out some old azalea bushes that were just tired, and they've been there a long time. And come to find out, I shouldn't have done that, at least not without asking first. And what I should have spent my time somewhere else. So I was telling this buddy of mine that, and he said, yes, that his wife had been out of town for a day visiting somebody, I don't know. And he took it upon himself to go into the laundry room, and the laundry had stacked up. They'd been out of town, and then they'd come back, and they'd been very busy with the kid. They've got two children, and it's summertime, and big pile of laundry in the laundry room. So he goes in there and does all the laundry. Has it all sitting out in the den, all folded up, nice, neat, beautiful stacks of everything. Everything folded just so. Turns out he's not supposed to do laundry. Because sometimes you just don't, as guys, we just don't know what we're doing. Now, there are ways that can work in your favor, guys. And I'm just going to throw this out there. I'm just going to throw this out there. If you're asked to do something, because I saw a guy at the newspaper many, many years ago, a guy who worked in the photo department. We were talking about trying to avoid extra work. My theory on work at the workplace is if somebody needs you, your help doing something, you just go do it and try to make yourself a valuable member of the team and make sure that everybody understands you're a team player. His objective was to do as little extra as possible. And so when he was asked to do things, he would intentionally do them sloppily and wrong so that nobody would ever ask him again. And, you know, it wasn't but about 3 weeks later that I never could really find that guy to talk to him anymore. He was kind of gone. I need to pause at the bottom here to remind you that Fishing Tackle Unlimited and Shimano are still the best fishing partners you can have. You know, it's been a year since I talked about all the great new product that Shimano launched at ICAST in 2014. And next weekend is ICAST again over in Orlando, the national or international, really, opportunity for manufacturers to show off all their new stuff, to get it into the hands of the buyers, who then get it into your hands and my hands so that we can enjoy fishing with it. And Shimano is bringing on some really good stuff once again, as if good heaven, the I-Series Corrados, the CI-4 Kronarchs, the Alder Baron, as if those reels weren't enough for us around here. They're just going to keep rolling out new stuff. Rods, reels, lures, lines, Shimano, everything from Shimano. Are you kidding me? That they set the standard, and they have for years. You know it. I know it. There's not a boat in Texas, probably. Certainly not a boat along the coast that doesn't have Shimano products in it somewhere. Fishing Tackle Unlimited, the largest tackle stores on the planet. Two of them, and they're both right here in Houston. Rods, reels, footwear, kayaks, stand-up paddle boards, ice chests, sunglasses, fly fishing equipment, an incredible fly fishing department in both stores. And people, everybody in the store knows how to fish. If you're talking to somebody in the fly fishing department, you're talking to a dedicated expert fly fisherman. If you're talking to somebody back on the saltwater lures aisle, you're talking to somebody who probably was wading the surf the last time it was green. Fishing Tackle Unlimited and Shimano, the best fishing partners you can have. You'll find them I-45 south at Fuquay, I-10 between Campbell and Voss. Fishing Tackle Unlimited and Shimano. It just doesn't get any better than that. All right, so back to, I'm not going to do mountain lions again. I think I'll wait and do the dog thing one more time, just for giggles. It would be fun almost. The irony of a dog personality contest is that no matter what cute thing your dog does, now, unless you're a professional dog trainer and you've got this dog in shape and has been doing the same cool, hip-looking thing for 5 years, if your dog does really cool, funny things at home and you take them into an unfamiliar environment and put them around 1,000 other dogs, chances are they may not do that. Chances are they may not perform for you. But what the heck? Put them on a lead, take them down there, take a swing. Your dog may be the next Lassie or Ren 10-10 or who knows. Connor, are you there? There you are. Did you grow up with any movie or television dogs that you just couldn't wait to see week to week?
Air Bud.
Yeah, my son's 7 years old and watched Air Bud. I don't even know how to... How long has that been around?
I've been around for a little while. I was a kid. The first one came out.
Okay, well, fair enough then. Yeah, there have been a couple sequels, huh?
Yeah, I think there's been about 10.
Air Bud. Yeah, I remember watching those things, and the only redeeming quality was beach volleyball.
97.
Okay, so 97? Yeah.
Yeah, I was 7 years
been
old.
Been a while. All right. God, you were born in 1990, really?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm-mm. All right, fair enough. The Texas Game Wardens, by the way, have wrapped up the investigation into that alligator attack that took the life of Tommy Woodard.
Yeah, we talked about that this week.
Did you?
On the show, on the morning show.
Yeah, and what did the morning show boys have to say, those alligator experts?
Well, we couldn't believe that the guy would, if it says don't swim, don't swim.
Yes, that's true. That's a good point.
It feels pretty simple.
Yeah, if you're in the water at night in an area where alligators are routinely being fed and encouraged to come up close because the tourists want to see them or the locals want to talk to them or do whatever, he had some responsibility there, and I suspect that it was either done on a bet or on a dare, and there might have been, I don't know, but there may or may not have been even a couple of beers involved. You know, it's midnight, and if you're, that's a bad place to jump into the water. It's just a bad idea. It would not be entirely unlike hopping into the water offshore here. You go about 2 miles offshore and jump in the water in the middle of the night and try to swim to the beach. You might not make it. A lot of sharks off our coast. We have been spared the attacks that a lot of other places have. The Carolinas, good heavens, would they have like six or seven in about a two-week span, a couple of people killed. Very frightening. And there was a lot of attention paid to that, a lot of questioning whether or not there was some big environmental factor at play, some climate change was thrown into the mix just because it's thrown into every mix. And what a couple of those incidents at least came down to, and it's hard to call them shark bites or shark attacks. I think bite might be more appropriate in some instances because in a lot of cases the sharks aren't actually aggressively attacking. They're just curiously biting. And most times they don't like to eat people. It's rare that they end in fatality. But nonetheless, if it's you or someone you know who is bitten by a shark, regardless of how severe or not the bite is, it's a horrible experience. So what they found in a couple of these instances on the East Coast, though, was that there's a lot of interest, as there has been for many years now, in shark fishing, pretty much ever since Jaws came out. And on the big piers over there, there are a lot of people chumming these sharks and trying to bring them closer, deliberately bringing them closer to shore. It might be time to kind of examine that practice and, without stopping fishing, just allow the baited line to be dropped, but maybe back off of the big old bloody bags of chum hanging off the ends of piers. I just don't see that as a really good idea in an area where there are hundreds and sometimes maybe thousands of people over there in the water. Now, Mojo weighing in about that alligator, he said he believes he read that it happened not long after closing time. Yeah, it was well into the night that this guy chose to jump into the water, and sad that the man passed away, obviously, and certainly. But man, you don't stick your finger into the cage and expect it not to get bitten. Michael Connor sent me a bunch of stories. I'm going to have to check on them. Oh, I did hear about this Victoria guy saving his dog. Now, let me get this one up here real quick, and maybe we'll talk about it after the break, make sure where it is, when it is, what it is. Texas dog near Euclid. What state is this in?
Which one? The dog?
Cougar,
I think
yeah.
That's a Canadian story.
Okay. Okay, yeah, I didn't think it was around here, certainly, and I don't recognize the names of those towns. But then again, I looked up and saw in the headline, Victoria, man. Now, Victoria? Yeah, it's got to be up there in Canada.
Yeah, I think it's British Columbia.
Okay. Oh, he even got the cat. Saves his dog. There was another one I saw where a guy, is this the guy who punched the cat in the mouth?
That's what he says.
Yeah, and he's also carrying a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe he punched it in the mouth after he shot it.
I don't think so. I think the story goes that he did not, that he went and picked the dang thing up before.
Picked the cat up?
Yep.
And just wrestled his dog out of its...
No, I don't think it got to that point.
Wow. Well, there's just as they say in a lot of these cases, there's two witnesses and one of them's dead. The cat didn't make it. That'd take a, you know, I tell you what though, if it's my dog and I'd had that dog a while and a mountain lion's grabbing it, I'm going to take my chances.
Oh,
the
I would
one
too.
Thing, the one thing I did notice in this story about the mountain, gosh, I got to take a break here. One thing I did notice in the story about mountain lions that I've been reading from Parks and Wildlife, the info they have there, is that unlike a bear, if a bear attacks you, the protocol is to roll over and play dead. And they'll get tired of you, like a cat swatting at a mouse or something. Once it's dead, they just get bored with it and walk away. Mountain lion, you fight back with everything you've got. And a lot of times, hopefully the time that it's you, the cat will just say, okay, I give. I'll go find something that doesn't fight as hard. I'll go find a bunny rabbit and see how I do there. I'm not really hungry enough to try to eat you, but you just made me mad because you were walking on my trail. I jumped you, but you're whipping my little kitty behind, and I'm going to give up. By the way, that mountain lion this guy got looks to be a kind of a small female. May have even been a juvenile cat. That's not a terribly big cat, unless this guy's 8 feet tall.
His dog was a tiny dachshund.
Fair fight. The dachshund probably could have taken that cat. Not much of a mountain lion, if you ask me. 713-212-5790. We'll check out for a couple of minutes, be back to wrap this hour, and then talk to James B. Toll, host of Stop the Threat, at 8 o'clock. If you want to catch more fish and actually get to keep a lot of them, head over to Louisiana for a trip. Go over there for a day or two or three. Fish with somebody from the Louisiana Charter Boat Association. You go to fishlcba.com. That's the website, fishlcba.com. Click on a destination, and then click on the name of somebody whose name sounds like someone who can fish. Now, they can all fish. They're all licensed captains. They're all vetted by the association to make sure they're professionals and will take a great put a great effort toward making sure that you and your friends or family catch a lot of fish, whether it's reds and trout and flounder inshore. Maybe you want to go out and chase tarpon and tuna and wahoo and kings and whatever else offshore, big red snapper. And you go over there, you get to catch a lot of fish, you get to enjoy that fine Cajun cooking, and make some new friends. Fish, where they get to keep a lot of fish. If you hang out around Lake Charles a little bit, you can also enjoy that adult entertainment at night as well. Make a little contribution to the local economy. Go to fishlcba.com. That's the website again, fishlcba.com. We'll break, be back. The Doug Pike Show on Sports Talk 790.
This is Sports Talk 790 on the go with iHeartRadio.
Friends, you've got to try it.
The conversation continues. This is the Doug Pike Show.
And there they go. 7:55, just a couple of minutes before we get James Toll on the phone. Scrolling through some stuff on the internet, got distracted, as I always do, and came across some old pictures of deer. And there were two pretty funny ones. One was a picture of a sign that was posted. Big black and yellow sign said, "Deer baiting is illegal." You cannot... Deer baiting is illegal. This pile of corn is intended for squirrels and rabbits and birds. Any deer caught eating this corn will be shot. The other is the more macabre line of humor that inspired, and I've seen two of them now, and I haven't seen one in Texas, but I suspect in the hill country there's probably at least one a year. Somebody had gone to the trouble of going to a party store or a grocery store's floral department or somewhere, getting a helium balloon that said, "Get well soon," and tying it to the hoof or antler of a deer that had been struck by a car. It takes a special kind of weird to do something like that. And one side of me says, "Oh, that's a little over the top." The other side is, "That's pretty creative and clever." I'll give clever points and creativity points, but it is a little weird. Interestingly enough, the water at the Surfside Jetty does not look bad right now, and I'm looking at real time photos, 10 seconds old, not exactly dated. It looks quite fishable, and I can't tell because the actual imagery is not super tack sharp. The water in the up close part is good, but out all the way onto the rocks, it's not as clear as I would like it to be. I can't really judge the crowd out there, but it looks like there's a pretty good line of people, which tells me that there are probably a good number of fish being caught. 713-212-5790, the telephone number. When we get finished talking to James in this first hour, or in the top of the second hour, I'm going to go back to the Humane Society of the United States. Has nothing to do with Houston. Humane Society of the United States got itself in the news again in a feeble attempt that didn't pan out for them, by the way, an attempt to kind of divide and conquer, as so many groups have done with sportsmen's groups. The anti-hunters, the animal activists, are always trying to split us and get us working against each other and make inroads that way, and it didn't happen for them. They were trying to get some work done on the endangered with the Endangered Species Act and gray wolves. I've got time to tell you now. It's not a big enough deal to start trying to tease. And the bottom line is that they were trying to get the status change from endangered to threatened instead of just taking them off and hopefully getting hunters to just come running out and saying, well, those guys are doing this, and get some other groups to say, well, these guys are doing that. And it didn't work. The federal government sided with maintaining state management of these animals and allowing some hunting and agreeing with all of us that that's pretty much the best way. The story I will tease for you is one about hog hunting in Louisiana. Apparently, if
your hand and generally afterwards, they have a flood of questions after everybody's starting to leave.
Oh, I'll bet. Yeah, and the rules change when you're in a situation like that. I've watched the show and seen so many different scenarios. And the rules, whatever the scenario, as soon as that gun is introduced, whether you're holding it or looking down the barrel of it, everything changes, doesn't it?
Absolutely correct. And we have said this many times, that once you draw your weapon, you have now run out of options.
Mm-hmm.
So
be
careful when that time comes.
A lot of people in this country armed themselves in recent years. Tens of thousands of concealed carry permits issued. Those folks they've been through hours of training, but once they get the card, they tend to... You all right there, James?
Yeah. Yeah, I had to shut the phone off. Sorry about that.
Oh, thought there was some sort of an alert you needed to respond to.
It is. In
oh,
fact, it
gosh.
Is an alert. It's an alert from the studio, but
oh,
go ahead.
Oh, Lord. Anyway, so we've got all these people with concealed carry permits. They take whatever hours of training are required, but once they get the card, they tend to kind of fall back on just shooting once or twice at paper at the range. That doesn't help much in the real world, does it?
Yeah, you know what, Doug? Most people are first off, they've read the paper, they've seen what's going on in the
right.
world, they're concerned for their family, and they go out and they purchase a gun. They go out and they spend some time on a range, hopefully with an instructor, but maybe not,
mm-hmm.
and then they come home, the gun goes in the drawer, and they wait for something to happen. So that's not preparing what we would refer to as being prepared for mm-hmm. what might happen.
And there are very few places you can even do that. There aren't really I've been in one simulator here that was actors actually filmed, and the instructor had the ability to change the reactions of the actors with just a push of a button to how we reacted as the concealed carry people. And it was just standing in that simulator. I mean, I was telling my producer earlier, it just absolutely got my heart racing. It got my blood pressure up. It just made me, I was just so intense. The emotion was so intense. I'm not sure how I would react in a situation like that. And I've always considered myself pretty calm under pressure.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And in fact, that's what we say to folks, is that you're never going to know unless you're mentally prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the show does. We mentally prepare you by dropping you in that situation. You've seen the show. You know what we're doing.
I do.
So we do that show in a two-part series leading up to the shooting and then the aftermath or post-shooting. Mm-hmm. And we do that with law enforcement or attorneys, some attorneys involved, some 911 people mm-hmm. involved, because there's a huge amount of questions that surround these things that people don't even think of until after they see it. And then I get a ton of emails from people saying, James, I never thought of that. Thank you for your show. I can't tell you how many thank yous I have.
Oh, I'm sure. James B. Toll, Stop the Threat, Monday Sportsman Channel, Fridays on Pursuit Channel. Texas, one of the most accommodating states for gun owners. I'm glad to live here. We've had concealed carry for years. We've got campus carry and open carry coming up pretty soon. Talk a minute, if you would, please, to the people who were convinced years ago that concealed carry was going to ramp up gun violence, and I guess it's pretty much the same group that think open carry is going to do the same thing. It's just not, is it?
No, it isn't, and that's proven around the country mm-hmm. where open carry is legal. So everyone starts out that way, and actually there's a lot of law enforcement that usually stands against those particular rules, mm-hmm. allowing good law-abiding citizens to have a weapon, because to them, that's just one more gun that they have to worry about in the situation. But after it goes into law, there's very, very few exceptions to what takes place.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but most of the gun violence in this country takes place in cities that have the strictest gun laws we have, right?
I think we can all agree upon that.
Oh,
just
mercy.
Pick up the paper. Yeah.
Yeah, pick up a Chicago paper.
Yeah.
All right, you got the laws vary from state to state about when it's legal and advisable to draw and fire, and when it's legally a better idea to leave your weapon holstered and retreat. Talk a little bit about scenarios that would maybe be a better option to just back out of a fight.
Well, you know, you said something about it a little bit earlier. The fact of the matter is that once you draw your weapon and you decide to insert yourself into a situation, you have run out of options. The only thing that's going to take place after that is you're going to pull the trigger.
Okay.
That's the only option left on the table.
Mm-hmm.
So what we advise to people is, if your life is not in danger, if someone near you is not in danger, if your family's not in danger, if the bad guy in a convenience store robbery just comes in and says, listen, I'm here for the money, you guys just remain calm over there, I'm going to take the money and walk out the door. You know what? Let him take the money and walk
sure.
out the door. You're not law enforcement.
Right.
Be the best witness law enforcement has mm-hmm. when they arrive.
Yeah, that simulator deal I did years ago was a convenience store scenario where two guys come in, one guy draws and shoots the clerk, and he's got a clear sight line on me, and I drew and fired on him, scared that I was going to be next, because he didn't say anything to the clerk. There was no provocation involved. He just shot the guy. So I shot him, and the instructor said, okay, you got to think about this, Doug, because that guy's hitting the side, and when you get in a courtroom, somebody's going to argue that he didn't pose any threat to you at all. And that really opened my eyes to maybe just, again, having just left my hands up in the air and let the guy. But, God, it's hard
no.
to stand by and watch somebody
no, no,
get
no.
shot.
No, 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 no,
okay,
Doug, once he came in and he shot the cashier, you had every right, and you can
okay.
defend that in court.
Okay.
Now, what you left out was when two guys, I know the
yeah.
scenario you're talking about,
oh, yeah,
two
yeah.
guys came in, one of them shot the cashier, the other one came around the back of the store, and while you were thinking about it, he shot you.
Yes, he did. You're exactly right. You've seen that, haven't you? Golly, yeah, that you talk about an eye opener, because my heart's just racing, and I've just had to drop this guy because I thought he was going to shoot me next, and I'm kind of going, wow, that was crazy, and exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know the simulator, and he turns the corner and takes me.
But Doug, yeah, every time you go into a convenience store, you remember that, don't you?
Absolutely, I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
you learned from that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was great.
Right.
And there's a number of them in town. Athena has one of them. I know that Boyard has one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is another gun store in Houston, and I'm just not sure, but I'm positive that those two have simulators, and they're very inexpensive.
Yeah, Gander Mountain is the other one, at least that I know of, that has
right.
one.
Right. You're absolutely
mm-hmm.
correct. That's Gander Mountain out on 45,
correct.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in spring.
Yeah, lots of businesses, James, posting signs and bragging about not allowing weapons on their premises. You feel safe in a place like that?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I go to one of them, and I just recently saw the 30-06 sign, and the 30-06 says you can't have a gun on my premises
right.
without my permission.
Right.
And I just recently saw that, and I spoke to the people there because I enjoyed this particular facility,
mm-hmm.
and I was disappointed that they had put that up. And then, of course, he told me that the owners of the this particular place I was standing in are UK people from England.
Okay.
And I said, well, that answers it then, because you can't have mm-hmm. a gun in England. And they're under that same sort of thinking. And so they put up the 30-06 sign here. And, you know, I would say to people, as I told them, I said, if you put up a 30-06 sign, what you're saying to gun owners is, we don't want your money.
Mm-hmm.
Turn around and walk
mm-hmm.
away.
Yeah, we're not worried about your safety. We don't want your money. You guys go ahead and go somewhere else. That's a shame, too. In a place, let's say you've carried, and I had this little exchange earlier in the program, and one of my very long-time listeners, a gun owner, a guy whose opinion I value, weighed in on this. Let's say, despite that sign, you and your family are in a place and you've thought, you know, I walked four blocks to get here. I've got my gun and my belt. I'm going on in. And you're in there and somebody comes running through the door waving a gun and maybe firing one into the ceiling. Now what do you do?
Well, I know what I'm going to do. I'm probably going to insert myself into that situation,
yeah.
draw
yeah.
my weapon, and protect as many people as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also said this a number of times, just to follow up on that a little bit, Doug, is that the first person who sees the next terrorist attack, or attack of terror, depending on how you want to
mm-hmm.
define it, is probably going to be a law-abiding citizen way before law enforcement sees it happen. And if that good law-abiding citizen is armed, he can change the way that takes place.
Boy, isn't that the truth? Why is it so simple for you and me to understand this and so difficult for other people who expect us all to just cower and hope that the guy runs out of bullets before he gets to you?
You know, I think that goes back to thousands of years ago.
Mm, yeah.
Some of us lead, some of us follow, some of us are afraid, some of us
yeah.
run towards the gunfire, some of us run away from it. Thank God there's a few of us out there, Doug, and thank you for being one of them who's willing to run towards the gunfire.
My pleasure. James B. Toll, the program, again, I presume, is doing very well. I hope it is.
Yeah, Stop the Threat. We're very happy with it going into the seventh season.
Outstanding. Do you have anything else on the drawing board you want to share?
I think I'm certainly willing to come back on and discuss any issues relating
Good.
To it, but I think we did a pretty good introduction.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time. I hope we can do it again.
Thanks, Doug.
My pleasure.
Bye.
Mm-hmm, bye-bye. Good guy. Really good guy. Knows his stuff. I kind of agree with him. Hey, law-abiding citizens, armed, some maniac decides that he or she is going to heap a lot of death on people, and a law-abiding citizens. Most of these incidents happen where there's not a whole lot of law enforcement presence. They don't exactly walk up to the front of the police station usually. See Dallas. They don't exactly start their mayhem around a bunch of people who they know are armed. They prey on the innocent. They prey on the perceived to be weak. But if there are more people out there who have gone through training, who have been willing to sit in a classroom for hours and learn the ins and outs of when it's okay and when not to draw a weapon, people who presumably have done a little bit of work on their own, then maybe, just maybe, fingers crossed, maybe, just maybe, somebody's going to stop one of these things before it really gets started, before a guy gets two rounds into his magazine and save 15, 20 people. Who knows? 713-212-5790. Kathy, hang on. I'll get you after this break. I know who that is, and I know she's an hour early. She's an early bird, though. This is one of the most enthusiastic, one of the most gung-ho, one of the most successful women I know in this area. She's rock solid, but she woke up an hour early. We'll talk to her on the other side of the break since she's already here. 713-212-5790. On the way out, a word for my friends at Grand Cay Harbor. That's where David Weekly Homes has built some absolutely gorgeous beach residences, if you will, coastal residences, right there between Kima and Galveston. You get a great waterfront home, just a couple of turns in the boat from Galveston Bay, and you do not have to pay coastal flood insurance. Choose your plan, watch it get built, or select from one of their move-in ready homes. I've been in three of these things now. They're absolutely gorgeous. You can be catching fish off the back porch next week. For details, to see the plans, to get an idea of where this is, take you about from where I am in the Galleria, take about an hour and 10 minutes to be in Grand Cay Harbor. And I tell you what, if I went there today, I probably wouldn't want to leave. Find out more, go to davidweeklyhomes.com and navigate your way to Grand Cay Harbor. You won't be able to miss the pictures on the website. If you have any salt water coursing through your veins at all, if you like the coastal lifestyle, you'll recognize which of those photos will lead you to Grand Cay Harbor from David Weekly Homes. DavidWeeklyHomes.com, that's the website, DavidWeeklyHomes.com. We'll break, be back. We'll talk to Kathy Wheatley on the, My bad, Kathy, I'm sorry, on the other side of this break.
This is Sports Talk 790. Real truth. Real local. Real Texans.
Great sports talk radio, man. I'm
talk here.
Well, I'm love struck, baby. I must confess. Life without you, darling, just a silent mess. Thinking about you, baby, give myself a thrill. I gotta have you, baby. Can't get my fill. I love you, baby.
I'm a good guy. To holler yee-haw, but I'm not gonna do it. A long line of pelicans flying down the beach at Surfside right now over, I would call it, sandy green water. It looks eminently fishable, especially along the rocks. I'm basing that on the color of the water that's coming out of the jetties. There's still water pouring down the Brazos, I think, and muddying the tides. Next incoming tide should be very good. Maybe we can go intercept some of that this afternoon. Maybe not. Hey, Kathy Wheatley, what's going on?
Oh, not much. I'm in beautiful New York, Long Island.
Oh, now I know why you called at 9 o'clock in Long Island time. Now I get it. What are you doing up there?
I am tending the beautiful art exhibition. There's a big art show here.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yes, I had no idea you would be attending an art show today. That's pretty special.
Yes, and last night there was a nice party on the beach and a bonfire.
Oh, mercy.
Well, it was just really beautiful.
Surprised you're awake already.
Yes.
Well, let's reel you back into Houston here. I can't believe this is the 15th edition of the Texas Tropics Tournament already. That's a really nice run and certainly speaks highly about the way you conduct an event.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, we are having a big golf tournament in a couple of weeks, July 27th. Mm-hmm. On Monday,
back
course,
at
Wildcat Golf Club. Yep.
Now, lots of golf tournaments out here. Obviously, they're all for good causes, but this one's sort of in that upper tier, right? You're playing on the 27th for Susan G. Komen Foundation, right?
Yes, we're all going to wear our pink and come out and play for Susan G. Komen for breast cancer, which is a great cause. We're going to have. Oh gosh, you know, we have a lot of really great sponsors. I'm very blessed because we have a lot of the same sponsors every year. We have the Good Company coming out and doing barbecue and sausage for dinner. We have Brick House providing lunch for everyone. We have Miller Lite and Coors Lite providing all the beverages for everybody. Walgreens and Sam's Club donates all the soft drinks and water. It's going to be hot.
Yes, it will be. That's a safe bet.
There's going to be lots of drinks.
Good. Forgive me for not knowing, Kathy, but just based on what I've read and stories from some friends, the Susan G. Komen Foundation and the money that's been raised through tournaments like yours has really helped. And women diagnosed with breast cancer, their odds of making it through it are getting a lot better, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I lost my mom to not breast cancer, but to lung cancer.
Right.
And
I
have
that.
Several friends that have breast cancer, and I actually lost my dad to lymphoma cancer.
Good
but cancer
heavens.
Is really close to my heart.
Yes,
and,
indeed.
We do raise money. I love the fact that, you know, Susan G. Komen does a lot for women, and it's actually local.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of, you know, women that can't afford, you know, if they don't have insurance, or it's just the process of going through everything. And, you know, they give them, you know, support.
Sure.
If they don't have support, they give them counseling. It's just a lot of things, you know. I mean, it's something that is very, I guess, dear to a woman.
Absolutely.
If you have to have your breast removed,
that's a
big ordeal if you haven't, you know, if you have breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So they really do help them go through a lot of things.
That's good. Yeah, everything, even emotional support costs money, and this is a good way to help support that. Let's get back to the golf for a second. What time is tee time that day? Do you know?
Okay, so registration starts at 9.
Okay.
We're going to tee off at noon. We will be having a caddy auction, of course, with the lovely Swimsuit USA models.
Well, hold on, you don't want to gloss over that. Let's talk about how that works and how fun that can be.
Well, what we do is we bring out, the girls actually volunteer. We bring out about 20, 25 models, and we auction off the girls to be caddies. They're kind of like the guy cheerleaders for the day. They have an amazing time. It's great camaraderie.
They're not carrying bags. They're not carrying golf bags. They're not that kind of caddy.
No, they're riding golf carts.
Cheerleaders, good description. That's perfect.
Yeah. And they have a great time, and we just have a huge raffle. We've got 40 to 60 items, and I'm talking about cool stuff. Not, you've been there.
It's a lot of fun.
The neat stuff that we have, and we're going to have a silent auction, and we have sports memorabilia. I mean, it's a great way to come out and enjoy, you know, your Monday and bring clients out and just enjoy yourself.
Four-person teams, I presume. What's it cost to play?
It's $650 a team.
Okay.
Everybody also gets all the stuff that I mentioned, including a goodie bag. We're also doing shirts this year. So if anybody, any company out there wants to, this is something we've never done before. We're actually putting the team's logos on the back of the T-shirt.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that's for free. Doesn't cost anything. So if anybody, you know, wants to have their company logo on the back of the shirt, they can have their logo on the back of the shirt.
That's great. So I'm guessing you wouldn't have called if the event was completely full. You got room for a couple more teams?
We do. We need I'd love to have about six more teams.
Okay. Okay. Michael Connor said he's volunteering. I don't know if he can come up with the money, but he wants to play in the event. We may have to talk about that.
Well, tell me if he wants to come out as an individual, if he can't get a whole team, and if you have two people that want to play and then another two people, we can put a team together. You know, we can make it work.
We'll make it work. Don't you worry. Do the guys have to wear pink since it's for breast cancer?
They don't have to wear pink.
But they can if they want. If they want to feel
they
pretty.
They can if they want. Maybe. All the girls are going to be in white shorts and pink tops. So.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, if you want to wear your pink, great. If you don't want to, you don't have to.
If you want to feel pretty, you can wear your pink. It's really great to hear from you, Kathy, even though you only call now when you need something.
I'm
giving you a hard time.
I've been so busy. I know.
Don't worry about it. I understand that completely. What I need now is contact information for this tournament so we can get people in touch with you.
Okay. So the best way to reach me is 713-884-8100.
Okay. And the website?
884-8100.
Right.
Or they can email me at my email address. And it's really simple. It's Kathy with a K at swimsuit, just like it sounds, swimsuitusa.net.
I've got it written down here. I will hope that we can get those five or six teams for you. And you enjoy yourself up there in New York.
I will. I'm heading from here to Chicago.
Golly,
so
really?
Going on a little trip, and I get back, and we're going to be hitting it hard. Putting on this golf tournament. And I really appreciate you guys, and thank you so much for all you do.
It's my pleasure, Kathy. Thank you.
Okay, have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Known her for a long time. She dedicates a lot of her time. It's a business she's running, of course. But above and beyond the business, she gives a lot of her personal time and a lot of her personal resources to these tournaments that she conducts. She chooses them selectively. And this one, a really good one. As she mentioned, she lost both of her parents to cancer. So I know there's a personal connection for her here. If you're interested in playing in this tournament for the Susan G. Komen Foundation, give her a call, 713-884-8100. 713-884-8100, or go to Kathy at swimsuitusa.net. She is, if you've been to a Ducks Unlimited banquet, a CCA banquet, especially years ago when it was first trendy for the banquets and the nonprofits to hire pretty girls to sell raffle tickets, Kathy organized one of the first companies to do that. And she has since grown that into something a lot bigger. And hats off to her. She's a smart businesswoman doing a really good job. Take a break here at the bottom to tell you about Costa Del Mar sunglasses, the clearest lenses on the planet. They call them 580. That's the designation coming from Costa. 580 lenses, they just rolls off the tongue for them. What it means to you is improved clarity, reduced eye fatigue, and you get to stay on the water longer because your eyes don't get tired. Your eyes don't hurt after being out there for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours. Try the amber or copper lenses for sight fishing. If you're an offshore guy, go with that glare-blocking blue mirror lens. It's going to just kick all that sunshine right out of your eyes and back into the atmosphere where it belongs. You can find Houston's largest selection of Costa Del Mar sunglasses at Fishing Tackle Unlimited. They're I-10 between Campbell and Voss, I-45 south at Fuquay, or go to the website and see all the entire Costa lineup at Fishing Tackle Unlimited at fishingtackleunlimited.com. So back to these hogs in Louisiana. We were going to talk about that some. Over in Louisiana, 64 feral hogs so far taken out by the West Bank Levee Authority. Okay, they had a problem with the hogs tearing up the levees and damaging the flood protection berms. We call them levees over here. And they call them levees in New Orleans, too, but I guess officially they're flood protection berms. According to the Times-Picayune, the newspaper there in Louisiana or in New Orleans, the Southeast Louisiana Flood Protection Authority, West, that's the governing board, had a little discussion of the expense that they have already incurred to take out 64 hogs. They're going to raise the ante and try to get some more. So far, the 64 hogs, which would have cost, if they had hired local people to go ahead and take them out, they probably could have charged admission and said, okay, you can come in and shoot some of these hogs. They're going to cost you $25 a piece, and I guarantee you there would have been enough Cajuns lined up to get all of those hogs out of there. Now, there's some guys fishing at the beach now. The jetty cam's got two guys in the water, one with live bait. I'll keep an eye on him, see if he catches anything. It cost them, to kill those 64 hogs, it cost them $25,000 so far. They've hired sharpshooters.
I would have done it for a grand.
I'd have done it for free. For bullets, just buy me a 64 bullets.
And feed me.
Yeah, I'll need a cheeseburger, and I'll bring my own gun. I just want 64 bullets, and maybe 65. There's some of them are tough. But the problem when you get into areas like this is that there may be a population factor, a human population in play here where downrange somewhere you might have an issue with that. I suspect that the sharpshooters who were hired are shooting weapons with noise suppression, which might be a factor.
Weapons that you don't necessarily need?
Well, no, not weapons you don't necessarily need. I mean, it's legal to hunt deer and hogs with a noise suppressor on your deer rifle here.
But you can get away with it. I mean, you don't necessarily need to go be, you can shoot it with a shotgun.
Well, that's true, too, if you get close enough.
Yeah.
But see, if the objective...
Or a pistol.
That becomes more sport than eradicate, than pest control. When you talk about shooting handguns and shotguns at pigs, you have to get a lot closer. And to get close, you have to introduce stealth. And for stealth, you introduce a lot of different factors. It's much easier to just have a high-powered rifle and a big old bait pile and noise suppressors. Because one of the advantages of that, we talked to the guys, Chris Parsons over at Radical Firearms, about this. The advantage to noise suppression when you're hunting hogs is that when you touch off the first round or two, if you're shooting a conventional rifle that just has a big boom coming out of the end, they know where that sound came from, and they turn and run away from it as fast as they can. when all they hear is kind of just a little like that, they don't know where it came from, so they don't know where to run. So what do? They kind of stand there and look at each other. And guess what the next sound they hear is? Another. And another one of their guys falls. They go, wow, where is this coming from?
Why aren't they trying to trap these things and then deal with them?
Yeah, that was a question I would have raised. But trapping, again.
We used to trap them back when I was a kid.
Oh, there are 10,000 hog traps probably out in Harris, Fort Bend, and Montgomery counties. They're everywhere. I was on a golf course the other day that had hog traps out. I can't remember where it was, but it wasn't far from here. I can assure you that. I haven't been far in a while. It was one of the local courses. Was I with my son? Oh, I know where it was. TPC San Antonio. Had a little trap in a little quiet area. Not a whole lot of people would have noticed it probably, but there it was. They're trying to keep them off that place. And they've got hog-proof fence around much of that property, way back in the back, kind of. Texas is not going to come up short of hogs, not in my lifetime or yours, or probably my son's. Trapping is an idea, but when you trap those hogs, then you either have to kill them or release them. Now, I wouldn't have a problem, frankly, if I were the good folks of Marrero, Louisiana, and the, what was it called here, the Southeast Louisiana Flood Protection Authority, West. I trap them, have them butchered, and give the meat to people who are kind of hungry. Then, of course, you get into that whole situation with whether or not the meat's tainted. And there were some anti-gun people who jumped in with some Hunters for the Hungry programs and claimed that they were feeding these people meat that had a bunch of lead in it, which is ridiculous and untrue. And that could be solved with very quickly with copper bullets. Bottom line is, though, they paid $25,000 to get rid of 64 hogs. See what's on Bob's mind here. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Well, not much. I enjoy your conversation on the hogs. Have you ever run hogs with dogs?
No, I haven't done that. I've seen it on television, but I haven't done
it.
You
need to do that. I won't go near them, but some of the boys out here at the golf course, they run our hogs off. And those dogs are amazing, and then they go in there and grab them and stick them.
That's crazy there. That's above my pay grade, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, those hogs can't turn around and get you. That's the one thing. But, you know, when they stab them, they stick them in the throat and stuff. And that's by those cutters, and that's scary.
A mess. Yeah, that's just a big, fat mess there. Yeah. I'm not that tough, Bob. You got a lot of them over at the golf course?
Oh, my. Yeah. It's like we've got a lot of woods that goes down to the San Jacinto River, and they make a big circle on certain times of the year. But we had them so bad earlier, and between the traps, once – and this is what I'm finding out. We've got three traps out, and they won't go near the traps anymore. I don't know what it is.
You know what? Joe Black just emailed me, and what he says here, the trouble with traps is after you catch some hogs, the rest will never go near it. You have to keep moving the traps.
Yep, and that's what we've done, too, but it still doesn't seem to work. We'll catch one now and then.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last time was about 3 or 4 months ago. We got three little ones in there. But we've got three big sows, and they're just throwing little ones like crazy.
I'm sure. Yeah, the best kind of trap, I think, for hogs is about 200 or about 140 grains of lead.
But there on the golf course and all the houses, it's pretty hard.
There is an issue with that. And the last thing you want to do is get out there and bow hunt them and have one go running through somebody's yard, dropping blood everywhere and squealing.
Yeah. But I enjoy that talking. But we got some young men, and they are young, and they like to run dogs, and they catch them every now and then. And I'll tell you what, that's a thrill watching them. So you ought to try that someday. Just go with them.
Yeah, I'll watch it from a distance, I can assure you. I'm not getting anywhere near. I've had a few of them run past me and whatnot. Lord knows I've hunted enough of them. But, man, oh, man, I just don't want to be that close to one that's in a bad mood.
Well, we had some here not too long ago, probably 3 or 4 months ago. We were on number 510. And it's all woods to the right of the tee box.
Right.
And you could hear them. They were snorting, and, I mean, they had to be close.
Oh, wow.
But we have a lot of people in the late afternoons, evenings, they drive their carts around, and they see them all the time.
I'll bet. Yeah, and once you've got them, it's really hard to get rid of them.
It is. You know, the dogs, running dogs is decent, but they come right back.
As soon as you take the dogs off the place. We had the place that I used to hunt down south of here, we had hogs over it, just all over the place. On a good afternoon, you might see 100. They were everywhere. Oh, yeah, they were everywhere. And it was about maybe 2 years ago. No, it's probably longer than that. 4 years ago, had some trail cams down there and started seeing pictures of collared pit bulls on there. Somebody was running dogs, and all of a sudden, no hogs at all. Now, they're coming back. I'm seeing signs of them down there.
Yeah.
But that was, we enjoyed hunting them, frankly, and the people who were running dogs on there weren't supposed to be on the property. We had a big poaching problem down there. Probably still do.
That's not one of the problems here because the sheriffs are real good. But
that is good.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I think it was 2 years ago, one of our traps, we got a little 6-point buck in it.
Wow.
It was unusual. We saw
He was embarrassed.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you something. You say there's no black panthers in Texas, correct?
According to the state of Texas, there's not.
Okay. We had a guy, that's probably 15 years ago, right here on the golf course before it was built up too much. Probably, he said he saw a panther in his garage.
Wow.
Now, it's hard for me to believe, too, but this guy's pretty reputable.
Yeah.
And I don't think he'd make it up. And then I'm going to say probably 3 months ago, I was driving from Crosby to Beaumont on old Highway 90.
Mm-hmm.
And something crossed the road in front of me and had a big long tail and is long and stuff. I couldn't tell what color, but I'm not going to say it was a panther, but it sure looked like one.
Yeah, if it's got a bill like a duck and feathers and webbed feet like a duck, it might have been a duck.
Yeah, but it was a long slender with a real long tail.
You know, that's what I saw years and years ago, and I was at about 90%, like I said earlier in the program, I was at about 90% that I was sure what I saw, but then the more I read, there just aren't that many of them. Now, that's not saying this guy didn't have one in his garage. I don't know that it was a black one. And it wouldn't be unusual, maybe, for that cat to seek shelter in there. But, boy, once you see them once, odds are pretty slim you're going to see that same cat again. They don't like being seen by people.
Yeah, and I've never seen any tracks. Like you said, we get a lot of bobcat tracks in the traps.
Right.
And the hogs will dig out and lay right down in the sand.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Wow, man.
I don't want to take up any more of your time, but I'm enjoying the program.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate it.
All righty.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go check in with John real quick before we have to go to a break. What's up, John?
Hey, just real quick thought.
Sure,
I hate to talk against what I think is probably one of your big sponsors, but all the pushing of noise suppressors for hunting.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I have is what's also now readily available is the infrared scopes.
Right.
You know, the night vision scopes.
Right.
Well, put infrared scope and noise suppression together and the less than lawful hunter. And what is that a recipe for?
Oh, it's a big recipe for poaching. There's no question about it.
Yeah, so I have a real problem with that. I know it's probably good for pig hunting and knocking out a bunch of pigs. And I know it's good for saving your ears, but everybody knows how to save their ears if they want to. They don't have to spend, I just have real hang up for that. I just think that's going to just explode the poaching situation.
Well, people who have been poaching they're going to continue poaching no matter what tools they're given. They were already doing it before they had suppression and night vision. And the Parks and Wildlife Department takes that into account. And
you can make that argument about every law. Well, we should allow drugs because
we're going to allow anything. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying. I'm just saying that the guys who are breaking the law are going to continue to break the law until we can catch them.
And right, and now we're making it easier for them to do it and harder to catch them.
That's harder
to catch them.
That's true.
Because the only way you're catching those poachers mostly is by hearing the shot.
Yeah. There's a good point, Matt. Well, that or seeing the big spotlight.
Seeing what? Seeing
what? Spotlight.
No, you don't see need lights anymore. See,
well, that's what I'm saying. You're not hearing the shot anymore either. That's your contention. So now
you're never going to catch them.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's just, I think about 5 years from now, this is all going to get rethought when they find out, holy cow, we opened Pandora's box.
Yeah, we'll see how many deer we're losing to that. And that'll be easy enough to measure. If hunting production goes down, if recreational hunting goes down and there's nothing else to which we can attribute it but poaching, that could be a problem.
But it's going to be hard to measure the mm-hmm. missing deer on open range. I'm not talking about the guys sneaking into the high fence places.
Sure.
They'll know what deer are missing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm talking about the, you know, the 400 acre leases, the 1,000 acre leases
right.
where deer go missing on there that nobody really, man, wonder what ever happened to, you know, old Mr. Widebody, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He just, we didn't see him this year. Well, you know. Anyway, just
maybe a hog hunter got him. I understand.
Yeah, a hog hunter mistook him.
Sure. All right, John. Thanks,
operative word took.
Yeah, I hear you. You got it, man.
All right, man. Take care.
Yes, sir. Bye bye. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough, but it's also just like I was trying to impress upon John. No matter what the rules are, and even though it seems we're making it much easier for these guys to do what they do, don't think for a minute that the Parks and Wildlife Department hasn't taken that into consideration. These are pretty smart men and women, especially the guys in the field. They know what they're fighting. They know what they're up against. And they do rely in great part on us to keep an eye on things. If you're driving down the road in any part of Texas and you see something that looks like it may be something wrong being done with fish or game, make a phone call. Get a game warden out there to check it out. You could uncover something. Who knows? I kind of see John's point. I understand why he's concerned about this, because if you give someone the ability to hunt in the middle of the night and you give someone the ability to hunt quietly in the middle of the night and where they can actually see what they're shooting at and take it out without making a whole lot more noise than a hand clap, there's potential there. But you're also, when you think about it, John, you're talking about adding at a minimum $2,000 to what's probably a $200 deer rifle they bought somewhere. So it's not as easy, and I don't think it's going to just be as widespread as you might think, because there is significant investment involved. And for guys who have been poaching for years, spotlighting and shooting unsuppressed rifles, they'll just keep doing that. I don't know where they're going to get the $2,000 to get in the game to be stealth night hunters. We need to take a little break. Speaking of guns and suppressors, if you do want to try this, this is a perfect segue right into Radical Firearms. I got something to tell you, too. Will suppressors or no suppressors, let me tell you about what they've got going on at Radical right now. I had a talk with the guys over there about this week, as a matter of fact. They're on Blue Bonnet near 59 at Kirkwood. They are a Class 3 manufacturer and retail shop that specializes in the AR-15 platform. What they offer you is complete in-house gunsmithing. They've got 3 certified gunsmiths over there. They can repair, they can adjust, they can modify, they can clean your weapon. They also do Cerakoting. They build and sell their own guns right there from bar stock. They start with a piece of bar stock and turn it into a rifle. One of the most accurate rifles you'll ever find, by the way. So here's the deal. Here's what we came up with for this season, for this month, and maybe some of August. We'll see. 50% off cleanings, 50% off repairs. If you've got a gun that needs work and you've been kind of wrestling because you thought it was going to be expensive to get it done, if you've got guns that you want to hunt with this year and you want to make sure that they are in top shape, maybe you're not that great at taking a gun apart and cleaning it and putting it back together, you've already priced it out. That's why you haven't done it. You thought, gosh, that's a lot of money. That sure is a lot of money. Take it over to Radical Firearms this month and get it done for half price. Now, I don't know the exact number, because whatever gun that is, a handgun costs less to clean than an AR-15. Repairs on guns depend on the parts and whatnot. But the bottom line is half price. Half price for my listeners only. You've got to tell them that I sent you over there to Radical Firearms. Again, they're on Blue Bonnet, just about a block south of 59 at Kirkwood. You take a left, go south on Kirkwood off 59, and the first light you get to, which you can see from the highway, is going to be Bluebonnet. You take another left there, go east, and then it's the first driveway on the right. It's very simple. Also, half price on single color Cerakoting. And if you need a transfer, you need a Type 2 transfer for a gun you're trying to buy from somewhere else, the usual price, $35. For my listeners, $10 until they tell me to stop. $10 until they tell me to stop. I hope they didn't tell me 15. I can't remember. I think it's 10, though. And when that was brought up in a meeting over there this week, kind of everybody in the room went, whoa, because that is a really good deal. Half off on repairs, half off on cleanings, which is pretty good thing to get done to your guns this time of year. And they'll get them done quickly right now, too. Turnaround time, I talked to the guys over there earlier, swapped a couple of emails. Turnaround time right now, a week, maybe a week and a half outside if they start getting some stuff in. You wait another 2 weeks, get a little closer to August when everybody starts getting the itch. It's going to take an awful long time. It could take 2-3 weeks. Try something else. Try some other shop where they've only got one guy working. We've got three gunsmiths over there at Radical Firearms. RadicalFirearms.com. Go look at what they do. Be sure to drop my name to get 50% off cleanings and repairs and single color Cerakote at Radical Firearms. We'll take a little break. Ringo, you're first up when we get back. The Doug Pike Show on Sports Talk 790.
You support Houston.
He's real Texan.
Thank God you got 790.
She's a real Texan. Real Texans talk here. Sports Talk 790.
On Sports Talk 790, we'll get in here almost got in before he started singing. The guy in the surf at Surfside actually looks like he bowed up on something. See if he's actually caught anything or maybe just hung a can in the water. Who knows? It's hard to tell sometimes. Well, it looked like he was catching a fish, and now it doesn't. Start with Ringo. What's up, Ringo?
Nothing much. You were playing the national anthem of rock and roll.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, that's good taste.
Thank you.
Well, I have a mental illness. I was diagnosed with schizophrenia back in 1987. I take medication for it.
Okay.
How could I own a handgun and then do a background check? And what do I need to do in the process to buy one?
Man, I don't know. I really don't know, Ringo. That would be a question for a gun store owner or a law enforcement guy. I don't know the answer to that. Because
you know, cool. You know, I don't believe in... I've never, messed with anybody in my life,
right.
You know?
I understand that, but boy, I'm not the guy to answer that question for you.
I would
start with one of the gun stores. Just call them and say, is there a way that I can get this done?
Yeah, because I know they do background checks.
Right. And you have to check some health boxes, too.
All right.
Yeah,
yes,
start
sir.
There, buddy. Start with one
I'm
of the gun stores.
I'm sorry to bother you.
Oh, no, you don't bother at all, man. I've heard from you before. It's not the first time you called this show.
Yeah, I know. I see deer and all that up in East Texas.
Yeah, man.
Hopefully it'll be a good year for you hunters out there.
Fingers crossed, buddy.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good luck, Ringo.
Bye.
See you, man. Yeah, I don't know the answer to his question. Maybe somebody does. If so, give me a holler. Hey, Bill, what's up, buddy? Bill?
Yeah, hello?
There he is. Yes, sir.
Yes. Let you know, I live in Southwest Houston, Richmond, Rosenberg, and my son left at 4 o'clock this morning to go wade fishing on the Surfside.
Good for him.
And he just texted me a picture about 5 or 6 nice trout.
Oh, man. Did he say where he was?
All I know is surf.
Just in the surf at Surfside. Yeah, I'm looking at the water right now. It looks pretty good. It really does.
I know you checked the cam, said it was kind of calm, but you weren't sure about clarity. And He got to go fishing, and I get to go help my 86-year-old mother downsize in assisted living center. So
the surf, especially while these finger mullet are running up and down the beach, these things are I've seen the video of how they look underwater, and I really, really, really want to put them in front of some of these trout in the surf. I have a very strong feeling about how well they're going to perform because they'll dig down about maybe a foot and a half or so, maybe 2 feet. And then they'll just
wiggle and wobble and not come floating back up too fast. They're not really a true suspending bait. They actually will float, but boy, they look good in the water, and I cannot wait. They sent me like two of them, I think. Really good colors. There's one that's a little baby speckled trout color. Oh, those big trout sure like that one. They certainly do. We need to take a little break here at the top of the hour, do the rejoin, as we call it here in the radio biz. On the way there, very quickly for my friends at Stubbs Cycles, they are celebrating their golden anniversary this year. 50 years selling motorcycles and ATVs and doing it right the entire time. That's how you stay in business for half a century. Stubbs Cycles, three generations and counting. They've got great machines from Honda, Suzuki, Polaris, and motorcycles. Oh, my gosh, do they have motorcycles? Pretty much every major brand there is covered at Stubbs. Two big stores right there next door to each other. Right there on Telephone Road, about a mile and a half, 2 miles north of Loop 610 South. Also, a huge inventory of used machines and motorcycles, used ATVs. Take advantage of somebody else's decision to upgrade or maybe just to get out of the game. Got a machine that's got low hours, still looks good, still rides good. You can get that at Stubbs at a nice little price. Or you can just go ahead and just bite off a big chunk of the stick and get yourself a brand new machine. Go over there. Pick out one you want online if you like at stubcycles.com. Print a picture of it. Take it over to Ivan. Take it to Ivan. Look for him. Go in the store. Ask for him. He is under instruction from the owners to take care of my listeners. You go in there, tell him I sent you over. He'll give you the best price you're going to find. Period. It's as simple as that. At Stubbs Cycles. The website where you start this search is stubcycles.com. That's stubscycles.com. We'll take that break. Be back.
Rockets, Astros, and real Texans talk. From the Renters Warehouse Studios, this is KBB Houston.
Sports Talk 790.
Home for your home teams. An iHeart radio station. This is the Doug Pike Show, brought to you by Fishing Tackle Unlimited and Shimano, the best fishing partners you can have. Also by Radical Firearms. You want it, we'll build it. Here's Doug Pike.
9:02, almost 3 on Sports Talk 790, the Doug Pike Show. Thanks for listening. Shift gears very quickly and go to the John Deere Classic. The John Deere Classic ongoing at TPC Deer Run up there in Illinois. Pretty good tournament laying out here. Justin Thomas at 12. Johnson Wagner and Tom Gillis at 11. Scott Pinckney, Daniel Summerhays, Will Wilcox at 10. If you're waiting for a household name, it would be a while. Keep going. There's Steve Strickers at 8. Sean Stephanie, our local product, having a really nice week. He's at 7 under par going into the final 36 holes of the competition. He's got as good a shot as anybody. You take those guys at 11 and 12 and maybe not have all of them run away. Let Sean go out and have a nice day today, and there are birdies to be had. David Hearn's already 3 under through 7 today. So, yeah, he could have himself a nice little tournament. Let me see if anybody else is making birdies like that. Oh, I do not like these ads that pop up where it says stop seeing the ad, and you click on that, and it goes to it's gone. What was wrong with this ad? And you tell them what was wrong with it, and then it just pops back up, or you have to keep looking at it, at that annoying little box.
We got to get you on the ad block game there, Doug.
How do you do that?
I can show you.
You're going to, oh yeah, I need you to do that because this is as annoying as anything I've ever seen. There was already a bunch of talk about Jordan Spieth and his prospects, his possibility of winning the Open Championship over there in Great Britain this year too. I saw several stories about that and I understand they're looking for headlines and they've got to put the big names out there. And at least they've kind of let Tiger Woods fall off the front page for a while. And I'm kind of glad, frankly, since he's what, number 200 and something in the world now. It drove me crazy the last 6 months when they would hang him out there on the front page of everything as the guy about whom we should all be talking. He was the picture that was the first one you saw, and he was number 200 in the world. There were 199 and change guys better, playing better, winning more, and there was Tiger. And I almost had just a little glimmer of sympathy for the guy for a while, because I know as a competitive person myself how hard it is not to be competitive in as your body changes, as your game changes. It's a little frustrating. It's a lot frustrating for a guy like him who was the best in the world for a long time. But okay, let's give these other guys a shot now. Let's take a look at what Justin Thomas and Johnson Wagner and Tom Gillis and Scott Pinckney are doing. They're winning a golf tournament this week. That's worth talking about. That's worth talking about. 713-212-5790, the telephone number. 713-212-5790. Michael Connor playing golf today. Will there be wagering involved in this round?
I doubt it.
Yeah, just for fun.
I think the three that I'm playing with, I should beat.
So give them strokes.
Easily? I shouldn't say easily, but I haven't. My last.
There's some golf karma about to bite you.
Well, my last three rounds have been just not up to my level of expectation. Okay. I'm a little disappointed myself lately.
So what did you expect, and what did you?
Well, I don't know. I'm just not hitting the ball very solid at the moment. You have those stretches where everything's not. It's not like I'm hooking it or doing anything terrible. It's just hitting it off the toe.
I went and hit some balls yesterday after work, and I wished I'd had time to play because I was striping it, buddy. I mean, I was really making good contact with my irons. I ran into an old high school friend of mine who's a member over at the same club and where I was practicing, and he just walked by, and he goes, "Man, can you put that in a pill for me?" He's a pretty good player, but I was really hitting it well. It had that nice crisp sound to it.
I had that a Saturday. I think it was two Saturdays ago. Went out and played 36, and that was 36 best holes of my life. And since then, it's been a little rough.
What you call balance?
Yep.
Balance in the universe.
I mean, when I'm hitting the driver, I think I missed two fairways the entire day.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah. And hadn't been there since.
When I didn't hit two fairways. Yeah.
Hadn't been there since.
Oh, well, that was fun. That's what memory is for. You have that good memory so you can remember the good rounds.
Yeah, I've been replaying it in my head quite a bit.
My son had a good little tournament on Wednesday. He and his partners took care of business again. And after a lengthy wait, this is one thing that's a little frustrating with these 7- and 8-year-old tournaments. That there are some of the parents who, one of the guys in front of us, one of the grown men in front of us had his, I presume it was his daughter and then maybe a friend of hers, because that's what it typically is in these things. And he read every putt that they had, it seemed like, from all four sides, and then would bring them in to see it all with him and then help them line it up and on and on and on. And a 9-hole scramble took 3.5 hours.
That's just not right at all.
Not even close to right, dude. It was about an hour at least off of being right. When we came in to turn in our card,
everybody was gone.
They were handing out awards. They were just about wrapping up the award ceremony for all the other divisions. But they played well. And once again, boom, boom. Manages after about a 15-minute wait on the 9th tee box, knowing that he and his crew need probably at least birdie to win this thing. He smoothly, after hitting a couple of stinkers, mind you, okay? So he may or may not be a good thought in his head at the time, but he rears back and hits one to about 15 feet pin high right on a 4-par, mind you. He belts it down there about 105 into at least a solid 1-club win for you and me. He hits a low runner down there to 15 feet, and they 2-putt for birdie and get out of there with the win. It was fun to watch. It was fun to watch, and I only wish I could play as well as he can. I predict that he'll probably be beating me in regular, real grown man's golf from regular, real, grown man's tees by the time he's 12, probably. 12.
I'd give you a couple more years than that.
I don't know, man.
I think.
Because, see, I'm kind of in decline already. I don't see my game I'll have to really work on my short game to hang with him.
You sell yourself way too short.
I don't know, man.
I'm telling you right now, he's.
You haven't seen him play.
Yeah, but you're also, you have the experience factor.
That's true.
I remember being 13, 14, 15 years old in that range and thinking I could beat all the grown-ups. And I could hit it further than all of them, but there was this thing called a temper.
Yeah, there's that. And there's that thing about how every shot counts.
Yeah.
That's a thing that these youngsters I see are really, they need more work in. They can all swing hard, and it's kind of like even as they get to be teenagers, they can all swing hard. But, man, it's that short game. It's that short game that pays the bills.
That's what made me love golf, which is the craziest thing. My mom used to just drop me and my brother off at the golf course and say, y'all go have fun. Well, after you hit a bucket of balls, which only takes, 30, 40
minutes.
Yeah,
you're done with that.
We'd be there for 2 hours. So the rest of the time, you're just putting and chipping. That's all we did. We didn't know. You know, so there's your kid that gets put into you to do that. So we would, once we started driving, we would go to the golf course just to putt and chip.
Oh, yeah.
Every day.
Yep. And it, look at how it paid off for you.
It worked.
You got a better short game than most. That a boy. You're a great player. We should bet sometime.
Oh, I still haven't beat you.
Hey, man.
We haven't been on a course in like a year
at
least.
It's been a while, yeah. Usually when we travel with rented clubs, that's how we end up playing. We need to actually play around here at some point. 713-212-5790. I don't want to go play against these professionals. Oh, I forgot to go get that. I have news. Let me see if I can find it in my email real quick. It's a good father-son. Yeah, here it is right here. Father-son championship going on up in the Woodlands at the Woodlands Country Club. Will and Tom Doty and Randy and Hunter Rawls leading going into today's competition. They start the round. Randy and Hunter started their round. This came from Neil Gilman. Up at the Texas Golf Association. Randy and Hunter started their round with four straight birdies. Wow. To send a message to the field. Yeah, they did so as well. Lubbock guys, the Doties playing in the group in front of Rawls, begin their day going even through the first five holes, so they lost a bunch of ground.
And if you grow up learning to play golf in Lubbock, you're going to learn how to play some golf.
Yep.
That's called wind.
Yeah, that and Corpus Christi. My brother-in-law grew up down in Corpus Christi. And he is a really good wind player. He knows how to knock down irons and knows how to control the distance with them into a wind. And it's fun to watch. It's a there's more art in the game of golf of someone who grew up in wind than some of these guys who just bomb it a mile. And that I wish they would, if they want to make golf courses more challenging, you can't make them longer because you just can't. There's no more room. Usually the tee boxes, especially where they play the major championships, are spread out all the way to the fences anyway. They can't go up to, what's the name of that doggone Chambers Bay and put the tee box on the other side of the railroad tracks. It's just, that's as far as they can go. So what they need to do is within reason and not like what they did at Chambers Bay, tighten fairways, grow some rough. I didn't like the slant, the contours of the fairways in that tournament. That was probably my biggest beef, was that you could hit an absolutely perfect tee shot, land it within 3 feet of where you wanted in the fairway, on the opposite side of the fairway, and have it roll off the other side and into thigh-high grass.
Yeah, it's okay to have that slant, but don't make it run off that far.
Yeah, let it stop. Let the turf in the fairway grow up enough that if you hit it into the good spot, at least, it'll eventually end up even in a hairy fairway rather than down in some bottomless pit from which you cannot extricate yourself. Keep it fair and reward the good shot. That's all I ask of any competition, any golf course. If you hit a good shot, let it be rewarded. They deserve it. If they hit it into that spot, then they deserve to have a second shot out of the fairway. Yeah, but that's just me. That's why they didn't call me and you to set up the USGA's US Open course. Probably that and about, 100 other reasons maybe. We need to take a little break here. Speaking of good golf courses, Black Horse, just sitting up there off 290, just waiting for you. Waiting for you and your buddy to show up this morning. Knock on the door, walk in the clubhouse, hey, we would like to get around today. And if they can't get you out right away, they've got two golf courses up there to work with, they can probably get you out soon. If you are young and tough, wait until about the middle of the day and go out there when it's hot, and you'll probably be able to just walk right out. What you'll walk onto is two of the best golf courses in this entire region. They keep them in great shape. They're a lot of fun to play. Totally different personalities, the North and the South courses, but both very fair. Just kind of pay attention to where you're supposed to be hitting it. You can see on every one of those 36 holes, if you stand there on that tee box and look for a second, you can pretty much figure out where you should hit the ball. If you're not hitting it there, maybe go back to the clubhouse and ask for an introduction to Marty Fleckman and his crew down at the teaching facility at the far end of the range, which is one of the biggest ranges you'll ever see, by the way. Probably stretch 100 guys across there hitting balls. I play a lot of tournaments up there, have a lot of fun. They put on a great show, whether it's just you and a buddy running up there for the afternoon or you and 150 buddies trying to raise a lot of money for a good cause. Black Horse Golf Club. To find out more, go to the website, blackhorsegolfclub.com. That's blackhorsegolfclub.com. We'll take a little break. Be right back. 9:16 on Sports Talk 790.
Keeping you connected to your teams.
Really enjoy listening to 790. It's the most informative in town.
Houston's Sports Talk 790.
Talk 790, Doug Pike Show. Thanks for listening. I certainly do appreciate it. Got some pretty good feedback after we talked with James Toll about handguns and concealed carry and open carry. I got an email from Warren, who is not a fan of open carry, and I understand that, certainly. I do. I'm not a huge fan, but I don't think that just because it becomes an option at some point that all of a sudden you're going to see a bunch of people out there openly carrying weapons. I really don't. I think that that's just it's an option for someone who is comfortable with that, but I don't know how many people would be. And I don't think he goes...
It feels like you would only want to be doing the open thing if you're in a place where you want people to know.
Yeah.
Right?
How many times
are you going to be hanging out in places like that?
Well, there's a lot of places where that still won't be an option. There's going to be a time and a place for that. He makes a presumption about the person who would open carry in his email. I won't go into that. And I do agree that it may not be something for young children to get all to get in front of, but it's hard for me as someone who has watched gun rights get pushed backward for so long to I just fear that if we concede and I don't know. I am torn on this, Warren. I am, and I would love to, if you want to give a call, 713-212-5790. We could discuss this and try and figure out what it is that concerns you about it. And yes, you're exactly right. He says, my opinion, handguns are made for killing or maiming other humans. That was the original purpose. It was a battle weapon, and it's a close in thing. And they've since gone on to enjoy some sporting purpose. But yeah, that's kind of what handguns are there for. And if somebody is intent on hurting me and I've got one of those, then I'm going to hurt them back. And I don't, it's a very fine line. I understand, Warren. It really is. It's a hard one for me as well. With open carry, because it does There will be some people who will abuse that opportunity and try to make points. And it's already been done. There are laws that make it possible to tote weapons around in this state already and it can be confusing for people. It can be awkward. It requires law enforcement to go investigate things and that's going to become an issue as soon as that happens. There's a guy with a gun over here at the store. There's a guy with a gun at the gas station. But it's a tough one. It is a tough one for me. And I'm not going to say I have all the answers either. I don't, but I don't like the idea of making it harder and harder to defend ourselves, because as cliche as it is, whatever the laws aren't going to apply to guys who would come up and try to hurt you. And if someone who is openly carrying a weapon, is filling up a gas tank late at night, odds are that the person who might have approached them with a knife is probably going to think twice about that. Probably not such a good idea. Well, that guy is going to avoid trouble altogether. He doesn't have to do anything with that weapon. Just stand there. And that crook, that bad person, is going to choose another victim, unfortunately. And not that person, but at least that person will have saved his own hide. I don't think that it's going to end up, as a lot of people think, in just a bunch of additional gun violence. I really don't. It's been proved that certainly where concealed carry is an option, and even in places where open carry is an option, guns don't go off that often. Everybody knows they're kind of on different ground at that point, and they don't want to get in that kind of a confrontation. We'll see how it comes out. I do agree with you, Warren, that it's a little slippery. I do. Yes, Billy Stoker weighing in from down there at Timber Creek. A business can post, they can post no conceal with that 30-06 law, the number of the law. I would presume that within open carry, there's also the provision for businesses to post that as well. That will be new and out there. I'm guessing. I don't know, but I would imagine so. Yeah, you can, as a private business owner, you can make your own rules pretty much. So yes, that's an option, and that may be, I suspect it would be exercised a lot. We'll just have to see how all this pans out. I need to pause at the bottom, speaking of gun things, to tell you once again about Texas Law Shield. This is a good thing to consider going into the new time we're going into. Make sure that your legal rights are represented. And again, Texas Law Shield, a good thing to be talking about along these lines, because it doesn't protect you from everything. What it protects you from is being wrongly prosecuted or wrongly charged with a crime. If you mess up with a gun, you're in big trouble. Period. End of story. Texas Law Shield is there to make sure that as a gun owner, if you are lawfully protecting your property, your loved ones, yourself, that you don't run into legal trouble. $10.95 a month is all it costs you. $10.95 a month, 100,000 plus Texans already signed up. Or Texas Law Shield, because what it does is if, heaven forbid, you actually do have to draw that weapon, whether you fire it or not, that sets off a chain of events, and it sets off some legal questions. It poses those questions, all of which you're going to have to answer. And you need a professional in the legal defense of gun laws, legal defense of gun owners, who can help you navigate that muddy water. Texas Law Shield does that for you. 855-478-6607. 855-478-6607, or go to texaslawshield.com. I don't know if I've ever been more torn over something than open carry, so don't mistake me for wanting to see a gun on every hip. I don't. But for someone who has been given that opportunity and who has passed the background checks, passed the training required, if I'm in a place and I see somebody openly carrying a weapon and just going about their business, buying their groceries or doing whatever they're doing, I don't think I'm going to be just instantly shocked and concerned. It's going to take more than that. I would rather know the guy's got one and see it there in a holster than have somebody who has ill intent come in with one under a shirt tail. I know that. 713-212-5790. Weigh in if you like. It's a tough one, no question about it. I'll go to the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department's news from the holiday weekend, the law enforcement news of the holiday weekend, and most of the stories are exactly what you would presume. There are people getting cited for on the water for life jacket issue. There are people maybe who have, there were some accident victims that there's reports from. But the one that caught my eye is the story of a 41-year-old guy out of Marble Falls who was arrested late Saturday, booked into the jail, intoxication assault charges after the boat he was allegedly operating collided with what, Michael Connor? He's driving a boat. They allege that he was intoxicated when he allegedly was operating this boat and allegedly hit the Marble Falls Police Department's Marine Safety Patrol vessel. He ran into the police boat. So there's a really good chance that those charges are going to stick. Actually, he ended up seriously injuring the police captain, Marble Falls police captain, who was on board that patrol vessel. This guy finds himself in a heap of trouble. Let's go talk to Robert. Hey, Robert, what's up, buddy?
Hey, not much. Quick question. I have a son that actually works for a local pizza delivery place. I'm calling out Cypress. And he told me the other day that there was a couple other drivers that have been, you know, getting robbed at gunpoint.
Oh, gosh.
So I guess my question is this, you know, because I'm sitting there thinking of his safety. You know, he's 19 years old. He's going to school, you know, trying to put himself through school. And, you know, of course, I'm helping him out and everything. Mm-hmm. But if our company is going to start, I guess, adjusting their laws, because obviously their policy is you can't carry any kind of firearm or anything of that right in your car. And I'm just wondering now, is there going to be a little bit of
relaxation?
Either relaxation or tolerance if they're able to, you know, pass the, you know, the law or pass the exam, pass the, you know, the classes and everything like that, if they go through the proper channels. I mean, is this new law, when it comes completely, totally in effect, is it going to, I guess, relax?
I doubt, Robert, that pizza delivery guys will be allowed to carry firearms, because that, man, there is just so much room when you're walking up a dark sidewalk with a pizza box in one hand and change for a 20 in the other. I would just like James was talking about, better to go ahead and just give up some money and a pizza than get yourself in a gunfight.
Well, and you're right. But there has, I mean, nobody really hears about it too much, but, you know, he's told me a couple of situations right to where somebody's been hurt. Somebody's actually lost their lives, delivering pizza, mm-hmm, based upon, you know, the, you know, numbskulls out there that are, you know, trying to be, you know, I don't know what they're trying to do, but they're trying to do something. And, you know, it just kind of concerns me. I mean, you know, here's my son. He's in there. He's working hard. Mm-hmm. He's trying to put, you know, help pay for his college education, like I'm, you know, doing for him too as well.
Yeah,
and he's, you know, trying to learn responsibility. And at the same time, you know, it's already tough enough. I've got to worry about safety, just him being 19 years old.
Yeah, just driving to and from work.
Exactly. To and from work. And now, you know, I've had him try to reduce his night shifts on the weekend to be more of the daytime. But, you know, the the report was is that this stuff has been happening in broad daylight.
That's a tough one, man. I mean,
and they're taught to, you know, give everything.
Sure.
You know, hey, here you go. Have a nice day.
Yeah, don't care much and give them everything you got.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's like you said earlier when you were talking about when you, you know, did the simulator and you walk into a convenience store, you saw the intent. That guy wasn't, you know, he was intent on shooting the clerk, but, you know, and then took his eyes to you, and, you know, there's some other intent there. My son is, you know, I'd like to think that he's got a pretty good head on his shoulders for a 19-year-old boy, but, you know, I mean, let's be honest with ourselves that sometimes when you give, I guess it would, give power or absolute power corrupts absolutely, kind of thing.
Yeah,
so,
you give them a fast car, they're going to drive it fast.
Yeah, exactly.
And that would be my concern with the pizza delivery guys. That just you're just getting yourself into probably into a bigger mess than you really want to be.
But if they have the open carry and they've got that strapped on to their side, and you know, are the crooks or the possible robbers going to, you know, like you said earlier, maybe have a second thought about walking up to somebody that does have that?
Well, let me flip that on you though, Robert. If the guy if the guy's walking up behind your son and he's got a gun and he sees your son got a gun, does he just if he really wants that $20, does he go ahead and just shoot first?
Well, you know,
no, that's my concern.
I just want him to be protected. You know, I mean, I want him to, you know, to I mean, I guess that's all. I mean, I guess the whole question is what do the you know the companies that do. You know, have the delivery to where the threat is out there. I mean, it's gotten to the point where I told him that, you know, you don't put the thing on top of your, on top of the car. You know, don't, because now you're advertising yourself.
That's true. Yeah, somebody may follow you to wherever you're going. That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
So, I mean, you know, that's one thing. And I said, if you get written up or anything like that, you have the corporate people come talk to me.
Yeah,
I don't care.
Robert,
because
I got to run. I got to run, buddy. That's a great question. I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thank you,
you
very much.
Have
you bet. Yeah, Rudy just weighed in by email, by the way. Whataburger came out and said last week that when open carry goes into effect, I'm reading Rudy's email here, they will not allow people who open carry in their restaurants. Concealed carry will still be allowed like it always has been. I'm not really, I'm reading again from Rudy. I'm not really a fan of open carry, to be honest. It's those open carry activists who stand on street corner with AR-15s that ruin it for everyone. Yeah, there's... when you're just standing out there with an AR-15 making a point that you can do it, it's a little over the top. I do think. I really do. I kind of agree with Rudy on this. And I don't know, Robert. I don't know what to tell you, buddy. It's a really hard one when you've got your son out there trying to make a living, trying to make some money to help pay for college, and then you got people who come up behind him and hurt him over $10 or $15. That's sad. We need to find a way to make that stop. Simple as that. Let's talk to Paul here. What's up, Paul?
Hey, Doug.
Hey.
Hey, I'll weigh in about what's your take on that game warden that was hunting illegally?
Yeah. Oh, I remember that. Yeah. What? There was let's try to, and I'm going to try to paraphrase and bring it up to speed without the story in front of me, but a game warden was caught allegedly hunting illegally.
No, he admitted to it. He admitted to it, though.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he did, didn't he? And
Three times illegally.
Somehow it was turned around that he was, at the moment all this was going on, it was that he was actually somehow game wardening, if you will.
Charges. Someone paraphrased it in the... And on, I saw on Too Cool, if a police officer was at a crack den smoking crack, and then all of a sudden he wanted to enforce the laws against the possession of controlled substance.
Yeah, that's I don't like that at all. I've got some game warden friends. I may try to call one of them this afternoon or tomorrow morning and weigh in.
Oh, no, they rallied around, them there.
Yeah, but not all of them. Not all of them will do that. I got some guys I bet I can find out from and may have
it's a shame he got shot and everything trying to enforce the laws that he was breaking, but,
Yeah, that's an interesting twist. I'm remembering the story more and more.
That shot in the chest with a 308. I thought, man, a 308, that's instant death. But I don't know.
Apparently
maybe it wasn't.
Missed the vitals and just got through. And he got patched up.
But wow.
He was poaching and somebody shot him. And
Yeah, and they got charged. And then the shooter got deferred adjudication. And the other one for not reporting what was a felony crime is still pending, apparently.
Wow, that's a mess. I'm gonna call one of my guys. I know exactly who I'm gonna call on this and kind of see where we go with it.
I appreciate
you bringing that up. I'm gonna make a note here.
All right, Doug. I'd weigh in on the gun stuff, but
Where are you on?
We're not diametrically opposed.
I want to hear it. Then that's fine. No, I
well,
that.
I mean, on. I'm kind of hypocrite because I mean, one of the reasons I just signed up for a lifetime member of CCA was to get that sweet little AR-15, and you know.
Well, what's wrong with that? Nothing. So
nothing. I mean, it's a law, but you know, I guess if you want to carry open carry, come do an academy like I did, and if you want to carry that heavy piece of metal and hurt your back after 25 years, then come on, do it. But
yeah, just sign
I don't know,
up.
Doug.
Open carry.
Here's what I don't like.
Sure.
The gun rights people that says, well, any more laws will only be, you know, followed by the law abiding people, and that you know, criminals don't follow the laws. Well,
right.
I'm not a statistician. I don't know all the stats, but common sense. Look at the other civilized countries like Australia, Japan, England. Those criminals. There's criminals there, and they're not running rampant with guns because they have all these gun laws.
Well, yeah, but
restricting ownership.
One of the problems I have with Australia is that shortly after their gun ban went into effect, the criminals, because they knew that there weren't guns going to be there, started kicking in the doors of old people.
Well, so, yeah, I know. There's. I mean,
what is my defense if when I'm 70 years old, if I can't have a gun, what's to keep some 20-year-old from kicking in my door?
I know. I mean, Doug. I think
I know.
I don't have the answer.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been carrying a gun since I was in the Army.
Sure.
And when I take it off and after I get off shift, it doesn't. I don't have it by the nightstand,
right,
which is probably not the smartest thing. It sits in the kitchen counter. I mean, I do have a shotgun under the bed if I had to do something, but it doesn't have anything right. I mean, it's got it in the.
But see,
you know, out of the chamber around.
You view that gun as a tool. And it's just a tool with which you do your job, and it's kind of like being a carpenter and hoping you never have to use your hammer.
Yeah, I mean, here's another thing. I mean, everyone says, well, you know, if there's an active shooter situation, you could stop it or mitigate, mm-hmm. minimize the damage. I mean, not everyone's Audie Murphy that's gonna attack a machine gun nest.
Right.
I mean, look at the Columbine. I mean, they sat out there while people were still shooting and. You know, there's situations, I mean, not everyone's a hero.
That's true.
I think I would like to think that if a situation happened, I haven't been in that situation, but mm-hmm. I would do the right thing.
Right.
Engage, but I mean, but I'm not saying,
It's easy for you and me and everybody else to say, yeah, boy, as soon as somebody whips out a weapon, we're going to drop them in their tracks before they hurt anybody.
Yep. I haven't come across. Hope I won't have to come across it, but
a lot of those same guys are going to wet their pants first before they do anything. Because that's something nobody wants to face. And unless you've actually been there, then don't tell me how you're going to react. And I'm not talking to you.
Yeah.
Some of these